Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya.
Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya.
Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya.
Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya.
Reading from Srimad Bhagavad Gita, chapter 5, text number 7.
Yoga,
yoga,
yukta,
yukta,
vishuddha,
vishuddha,
atma,
atma,
vijita,
vijita,
atma,
atma,
jita,
jita,
indriya,
indriya,
sarvabhuta,
Atma-bhuta,
atma, kurvanapi, na, lipyate, yoga-yukta-vishuddhatma, vijitatma jatendriyaha, sarva-bhutatma-bhutatma, Kurvan api na lipyate.
Yoga yukta.
Engaged in devotional service.
Vishuddha atma.
A purified soul.
Vijita atma.
Self-controlled.
Jita indriyaha.
Having conquered the senses,
sarva-bhuta,
to all living entities,
atma-bhuta,
atma,
compassionate,
kurvanapi,
although engaged in work,
na,
never,
lipyate,
is entangled.
Translation and purport by His Divine Grace, Srila Prabhupada.
One who works in devotion, who is a pure soul, and who controls his mind and senses is dear to everyone, and everyone is dear to him. Though always working, such a man is never entangled.
Purport.
One who is on the path of liberation by Krishna consciousness is very dear to every living being. And every living being is dear to him. This is due to his Krishna consciousness. Such a person cannot think of any living being as separate from Krishna, just as the leaves and branches of a tree are not separate from the tree. He knows very well that by pouring water on the root of the tree, the water will be distributed to all the leaves and branches, or by supplying food to the stomach, the energy is automatically distributed throughout the body. Because one who works in Krishna consciousness is servant to all, he is very dear to everyone. And because everyone is satisfied by his work, he is pure in consciousness. Because he is pure in consciousness, his mind is completely controlled. And because his mind is controlled, his senses are also controlled. Because his mind is always fixed on Krishna, there is no chance of his being deviated from Krishna. Nor is there a chance that he will engage his senses in matters other than the service of the Lord. He does not like to hear anything except topics relating to Krishna. He does not like to eat anything which is not offered to Krishna, and he does not wish to go anywhere if Krishna is not involved. Yes, he doesn't want to go to Disney World then. Therefore, his senses are controlled. A man of controlled senses cannot be offensive to anyone. One may ask, why then was Arjuna offensive in battle to others? Wasn't he in Krishna consciousness? Arjuna was only superficially offensive because, as has already been explained in the second chapter, all the assembled persons on the battlefield would continue to live individually as the soul cannot be slain. So spiritually, no one was killed on the battlefield of Kurukshetra. Only their dresses were changed by the order of Krishna. who was personally present. Therefore, Arjuna, while fighting on the battlefield of Kurukshetra, was not really fighting at all. He was simply carrying out the orders of Krishna in full Krishna consciousness. Such a person is never entangled in the reactions of work. Om jnana timadandasya gananjana shalakaya chakshurun miritam yena tasmai shri gurave namaha. One who works in devotion, who is a pure soul, and who controls his mind and senses is dear to everyone, and everyone is dear to him. Such a person, though always working, is never entangled. So if someone actually loves everyone, then generally people love him also. That's a fact. Prabhupada had so much affection, and therefore for the devotees, and therefore the devotees had so much affection for him. Even the little children, they didn't really know anything about philosophy. The way Prabhupada treated them, they were just super attracted to him. The way the little children would say, Prabhupada, was very, very, the little children very much were attracted by Prabhupada. Just hearing the little children would say Prabhupada's name, it actually attracted me to Prabhupada. Hearing the way the little children, one little child was calling out Prabhupada's name, that very much attracted me to Prabhupada. If a child can feel that way, that much affection, then what can I, maybe I can also feel some affection for Prabhupada, like a child. And so Prabhupada just attracted, because he had so much love and affection for us, that we could actually never repay that love and affection. I mean, how you could fully reciprocate the love of Prabhupada, because it was so pure and so selfless. All you could do was do the best you can to somehow reciprocate Prabhupada's love, and then he would, when you do that, he would shower even more love. So if there was a transcendental competition with, you know, who could give the most love, Prabhupada would always win, because you could never give Prabhupada as much love as he was giving to you. No way, no way you could ever do that. I mean, the feelings when you're with Prabhupada were so powerful. I remember when he was in Atlanta, I was just standing there. You know, it was a packed temple. I wanted to be real close to him, so I was standing right behind the Vyasa-san, and I was just thinking, well, if anybody came, you know, I'm just looking out the window, if somebody came, because there was a growing anti-cult movement at that time in America. I was thinking, if somebody came to harm Prabhupada, I'd be willing to take the bullet or whatever. If I could die to protect him, it'd be ecstatic. I was thinking like that. So Prabhupada gave so much love to us and totally gave himself to us that we felt as though we could do anything. We were willing to die for Prabhupada on the spot if necessary in his service. So such a pure devotee, as described in this verse, really does become very dear to the people in general. Dira-dira-dira-dira-jana-priyo. That is stated about the six Goswamis, that they were very, very dear both to the gentle and to the ruffians. Actually, in Vrindavan, everyone looked up to the Goswamis, especially Sanatana Goswami. Even if there was some family quarrel going on between husband and wife, they would go to Sanatana Goswami, and he would hear both sides of the argument. He'd hear the husband's side, he'd hear the wife's side, then he would say, you are right, and she is wrong, or you are right and he is wrong. And they would accept whatever Sanatana Goswami said. That's how dear he was to the people there, the village people. He was an authority for them. He was like God for them. He was a complete authority. They would just accept whatever he said and resolve their family quarrel with his help. So this is the beauty of a Krishna conscious person. because he has so much love for everyone. He just naturally, you know, attracts our love. And Prabhupada actually wanted us to all be like that. He wanted us to all be like this. That as the Goswamis were very attractive to the people in general, he wanted all of us to become Goswamis also. Whether we were a householder, brahmachari, or sannyasi, that didn't matter. But he wanted us to be Goswamis who bring the senses under control. Vacha vegam, manasa krodha vegam, jiva vegam, udaropasta vegam, etan vitanyo vishaheta deira sarvam apimam prithivim shishishyat. One who control mind, words, anger, tongue, belly, and genitals can make disciples all over the world. Now the Ritviks argue about the word can, that means they're able to, but they're not authorized to. Which is silly, because Prabhupada says right there in the Nectar Devotion that such a person who controls his senses is permitted to make disciples all over the world. So the Ritviks just juggle these words around. They bring the dictionary, the Karmi dictionary definition of the word can. And when Lord Chaitanya says that someone who knows the science of Krishna can become a guru, they say he has the ability, but he doesn't have the permission to do so. Unless the Ritviks give him permission, he's not authorized. And the Ritviks will not give permission. But it's silly, because Prabhupada says it is permitted, right there in the Nectar Devotion. The word is such a person is permitted. But anyway, that's a side point, because he brought that verse up. But Prabhupada wanted that every devotee in our movement should be such nice, clean, pure Vaishnava that wherever he goes, he commands respect. Not that he or she demands respect. You know the difference between commanding and demanding respect? Demanding says, you have to respect me. If I said, okay, you have to respect me, or you're going to be in big trouble, you see. I'm not going to let you have any prasadam today if you don't respect me. See, that's called demanding respect, and that's not really respect. But if I treat you in such a nice way, if I do things in such a pure and nice way that you naturally respect me, that's called commanding respect. So Prabhupada wanted us to command respect by being Goswamis. Each one of us should be a master of our senses. And he said, when they offer you respect, then automatically they make advancement. Do you know that? He said, like in Vrindavan, they will say Hare Krishna, or they say Jai Radhe when they see the devotee. He said, if they do that, that is a way of offering you respect, and they will make advancement by doing that. So if we in our dealings with the general public, if we're openly a devotee of Krishna and they know that, and we deal with them in such a way that they respect us, especially if we can get them to say Hare Krishna, teach people to say, you know, get people to say Hare Krishna to us. But anyway, the whole point is, if they can respect the devotees of Krishna, and that's us, it's supposed to be us anyway, if they can respect us, then they are making advancement by doing that. So we should always act in such a way that people respect us. That's what Prabhupada is making his point in this tape. And that will help our movement to be very, very effective. We should simply, everyone should just very much love the devotees and respect the devotees. So we really have to be exemplary and very, very nice Vaishnavas in all times, all places and circumstances. Another nice point here, though always working, such a man is never entangled. We were asked in the Sunday feast lecture, actually, one lady was asking, well, is Bhagavad Gita violence or is it nonviolence? And actually, it is a book of nonviolence. Arjuna was nonviolent. If Arjuna had refused to fight, that would have been violence, actually, in the spiritual sense, in the highest sense of the term. If Arjuna had refused to fight the battle, that would have been an act of violence. But because he wasn't surrendering to Krishna. But when he surrendered to Krishna, that is true nonviolence. Whatever Krishna wants, just be an instrument in Krishna's hands. How is it violence if he had disobeyed the order of Krishna? Because he's committing violence, first of all, against himself by not acting according to his actual constitutional position as a servant of Krishna. He's committing violence upon his own spiritual nature. And if he's committing violence on himself, then automatically he's committing violence on everybody else all around him. In other words, if you think that you're your body, you see, then you're committing violence on yourself. If you walk around in a state of mind thinking that you're your body, then you're going to think that everybody else is their body, and all your dealings will actually be violence upon them. So Arjuna was actually non-violent when he agreed to fight the battle. As Prabhupada is confirming here, he was not entangled with any reaction of having killed someone or hurt someone. You find this surprising?
Non-violent in war is pretty offensive.
Huh?
Being non-violent in war is pretty, for me, it's pretty.
It's Prabhupada, you know, Prabhupada had to. He didn't have an easy job of convincing, because you have to remember when Prabhupada came to 26 Second Avenue, it was the height of the anti-war movement. All the young dropout hippies were, you know, going on peace marches to protest the Vietnam War. They were shutting down college campuses, protesting the war. You know, Columbia University was taken over by the anti-war students. University of Texas was shut down by the anti-war students. This, you know, they shot dead some anti-war students at a campus in Ohio, I think it was. Two of them got shot dead on the campus for protesting the war. They were shot dead. Kent State University, yeah. So this was the crew that Prabhupada was selling on this concept of fighting a war. That Arjuna was engaged in pure bhakti when he was fighting a war. But Prabhupada was so powerful that he convinced us, even though we were all, you know, the peace and love crew with our peace symbols and everything, but we were convinced, because Prabhupada gave us what nobody else could give us. In those days, we had a saying, say, don't trust anybody over 30. That was the slogan of the 60s. Don't trust anybody over 30, because, you know, they're part of the establishment. You know, they're not part of the new peace movement, the peace and love movement. They have, you know, we are the real people. So we had this philosophy, don't trust anyone over 30, but yet we didn't have any real leadership. We wanted peace in the world, we wanted love everywhere, but we had no idea how to do it. We were being misdirected by people like Dr. Timothy Leary, who said just everybody take LSD. And then, you know, they'll solve all the problems. Just put LSD in the drinking water, so when people turn on their tap, they'll get, you know, they'll go on an LSD trip and they drink their water, and then the whole world will become peaceful and happy. This was the kind of bogus propaganda that was going around in the 60s. And they're actually fearful that some hippies may come to the city water supply and dump some LSD in the water supply. What will we do? How will we protect ourselves? There was some anxiety in those days. There was no proper leadership, no proper guidance. But in the middle of all that, you had all these young people, thousands and thousands and thousands of young people, who are rejecting the philosophy and the lifestyle of their parents, who wanted to find something positive and beautiful and wonderful that could make their lives perfect and make the world perfect. And that's when Prabhupada appeared on the scene. Krishna's arrangement. Prabhupada had no idea. Well, let me go to the America. There's a hippie movement going on, all these dropouts. Let me go to America now and give the hippie. No, it was all arranged by Krishna. It was all orchestrated by Krishna. Prabhupada had no idea. All he knew was he'd been trying for years how he can get out of India. And Krishna just arranged that he came just at the right time in the right place, the Lower East Side of Manhattan, where all these young dropouts were living and looking for, you know, meditating and reading books on Eastern philosophy and looking for gurus. That was the thing. People were looking for gurus back in the 60s. That was the big thing. Everybody was looking for a guru. So most people got misled. But those who were fortunate, they got Prabhupada. They were very fortunate. And Prabhupada has given us all, he's still here with us actually. Prabhupada is, in the higher sense, Prabhupada, just like it is said that Vrindavanam Puritjaja Napada Ekam Gachati. We can also say, Vrindavanam Puritjaja. Say, Iskan Puritjaja Napada Ekam Gachati. That Prabhupada never sets one foot outside of Iskan. Just like Krishna never leaves Vrindavan, actually Prabhupada has not left Iskan. The gopis kept Prabhupada captured within their hearts. And he could never leave Vrindavan. So we are keeping Prabhupada captured within our hearts, you see, by every day reading his books and trying to serve his orders. So Prabhupada can never leave Iskan. We captured him by the devotees' love. So by the mercy of his divine presence, we are able to penetrate into this sublime transcendental understanding. This is not intellectual. This requires the potency of a realized soul, actually, for the realization to come to us. We need to have that contact with the realized soul. So Prabhupada is a realized soul, and those who are strictly, who fully dedicated their lives to Prabhupada, they also have realization that is powerful and potent because they've fully given their lives to Srila Prabhupada. Those persons also have realization. Anyone in this movement who is completely surrendered to Prabhupada's instructions, those persons have realization. And if we hear from them, that realization can impact us and pull us out of our bewildered position in the modes of nature. So this is very sweet verse, especially this whole concept of the devotee being dear to everyone and everyone being dear to him. This is one symptom that we can use to actually, or one barometer, I mean to say, that we can use to analyze our own Krishna consciousness or lack thereof. How much do I actually feel love for all living beings? You see? Do I have grudges? Well, this devotee did that to me. That devotee did that to me. And so-and-so did this to me. You see? How much do we hold grudges in our heart? We can see Prabhupada's example. Even he had some trouble with his godbrothers, there's no doubt. He had one godbrother who was preaching against him. I think it was Ban Maharaj. He came to Toronto. He was saying things against ISKCON and making propaganda. You know what Prabhupada told him? He said, "I will be in Hawaii. Why don't you come and spend a few days with me? We can. Prabhupada invited him to come. We'd be together, We can associate together, talking, Krishna Katha." That was Prabhupada's way of dealing with someone who was inimical to him and to his movement, a godbrother who was very disrespectful and offensive. In a very loving spirit, he invited you to come and we associate together as godbrothers, you see. So just see the example of Prabhupada. He also instructed his disciples, don't let him speak in any temple. They wanted to come and speak. Prabhupada did not want these other Gaudiya Math people who were trying to do something separate against his movement. He didn't want them to speak in our temples. But the way he dealt with them, on the one hand, the disciples were instructed, don't let him speak in the temple. On the other hand, he was inviting you, please come and stay with me in Hawaii. We can spend some days together. So Prabhupada wasn't a fool to let somebody mess up his preaching. But at the same time, he didn't have any enmity. He was willing to have loving reciprocation with that person, open his heart to him on a person-to-person basis. So Prabhupada is the perfect example, and that's the great advantage of actually having a spiritual master physically present. that you can see him, you can associate with him, you can ask him questions, you can understand a lot about the nature of a person who is realized in Krishna consciousness when you have the chance to associate with such a person. So we had that with Srila Prabhupada, and now it's up to his disciples to do their level best to manifest those similar qualities in their personalities as much as they can. Begging Prabhupada for his mercy, they can do so. Because the younger devotees need to see living examples of what we had the chance to see, the living example of Prabhupada. Now those devotees who are joining this movement after Prabhupada's departure, they need to be able to also see persons who are very advanced and fixed in Krishna consciousness, who are living embodiments of the description. Prabhupada is person Bhagavatam, so the older devotees are a movement. It's up to them to just beg Prabhupada's mercy and just try their level best to also come to that standard of behavior, that standard of speech, and that standard of attitude, so that all the devotees can see an example of someone who is highly advanced in Krishna consciousness, so that they can become inspired also to become highly advanced in Krishna consciousness. So, we'll stop here. Are there any questions? Yes.
You said about commanding respect and demanding respect. Mm-hmm.
There is such a thing as telling someone, well, this is the proper etiquette. Like, this person is a senior devotee, or this person is a sannyasi, or this person is a spiritual master. So you, according to scripture, there are certain etiquettes you must observe in dealing with this person. That's a fact. But at the same time, those persons have to be acting in such a way to command respect, otherwise it won't be effective.
But like Lord Chaitanya, for that he took sannyas, because they were not listening to him, they were not offering him respect, for that he took sannyas.
Yes, but in those, you have to understand, in those days, the sannyasis were actually very renounced people, and they did command respect because of their renunciation. It wasn't just the name of sannyas. Those people in those days in India who took sannyas were very renounced people. And they did command respect by their qualities and characteristics. What's the point?
I'm saying that to command and demand respect, that sometimes even like personality is Lord Chaitanya, and he was a great personality, or Lord Krishna himself, that people were not respecting him as he was.
Oh yeah, well, that's the other side. I mean, even though in general such persons are loved and respected, there are demons. It's like we read in the Bhagavad Gita, O Rishikesha, the whole world becomes joyful by hearing the recitation of your name, except for the demons who run here and there. So there are always going to be those demoniac persons who will not love the advanced devotees, who want to kill them. Lord Jesus Christ is an example. Haridas Thakur is an example. There will be in the world demoniac elements who will want to kill the devotees. That's a fact. But the innocent people in general will be very attracted and appreciative of highly advanced devotees of the Lord. That's a fact also. It's confirmed by this verse. So we have to just depend on Krishna to protect us sometimes. I mean, having devotees who go in Sankirtan face danger. I know I had a gun pointed at my head one time, offering some, going out in book distribution. I had to face a six-shooter. Looked down the barrel of a six-shooter and pointed right at my head. So those things happen sometimes. You know, sometimes devotees are arrested. I spent many hours in jail, 36 hours in jail, for handing somebody a Back to Godhead magazine. So these things happen. This is why it's stated in the Chaitanya Charitamrita that one shouldn't get too close to the spiritual master. Familiarity breeds contempt. That's also stated. That's why, I mean, I'll give you an example. When Kirtanananda was sannyasi at New Vrindavan, Prabhupada told him to keep himself, live separately. A little bit of physical aloofness is good for the respect. Even in the material world, they do that. In the military, the officers and the enlisted men, they have two separate camps. It's a natural thing. They keep the office and the enlisted, they'll have two different dining facilities, different living facilities. There's a whole thing of how officers have to be respected in a certain way. There's certain etiquettes to, it's like, you know, when it's saluting senior officers, coming to attention. So there are certain etiquettes to reinforce that principle, so that one doesn't just take it. The familiarity breeds contempt. There has to be some described in the Bhagavatam, how the husband and wife relationship. There's what is that? Great respect. I think it said familiarity and great, what is it?
Intimacy
and great respect, both things. There's the intimate relationship, but there also has to be great respect. So that actually applies to all of our relationships. This is why I don't like, this is why I prefer the word Prabhu over guy. How you guys doing? It sounds familiar. Prabhu's is the word, Prabhu is the word that Prabhupada gave, not guy, for how we should approach the devotees. How you guys doing? I mean, that's pretty common now, but we were taught when we joined, these are Prabhus. You see, these are Prabhus. Actually, even everyone was a Prabhu. The ladies are Prabhus, everyone. Of course, technically speaking, Prabhu is a masculine Sanskrit word, and the feminine is Pravi. But Prabhupada actually used Prabhu both for the men and women. I've seen in things that Prabhupada wrote, just he was making it simple, because, you know, to get the movement started. But actually, the woman could be called Pravi. How do you spell it? It's a little bit harder to pronounce. But the idea is that everyone is our Prabhu, our master. Whether we say the feminine Prabhu masculine Prabhu or the feminine Pravi, every devotee is our master. And we have to have that great respect. And if we become too familiar and stop being respectful, seeing every devotee as my Prabhu or my master, that I'm the servant of every devotee in this movement, then what will happen is that familiarity will lead to contempt. We'll start finding fault, we'll develop, become inimical towards the devotees, we'll become offensive, and our chanting will be spoiled. So that's why I recommend Prabhus instead of guys for our devotees in ISKCON. I don't know how much that will be heeded, but that's my recommendation. These are Prabhus, they're not guys. They're Prabhus. Yes. What is the question?
And what if you're attached to a senior devotee but you don't want to get too familiar with them?
Well, then whenever you see him, offer your obeisances. And always, always offer to render service. Always be in that mood of offering service instead of being buddy-buddy. Just come, always be in the mood of rendering service. I have one disciple, very nice disciple of Bhaicharan Das, not Dave, but his prophet. But he's, whenever he comes, he's always spontaneously, he doesn't have to be told that you should do this or you should do that. He's just looking for service. If I'm doing something, he's saying, why the spiritual master should be doing this service? You can want to take it over. Like, we just have a small preaching center, Maharaji and I, and, you know, since there's just two of us there, I'm doing a lot of things like, you know, washing the deity plates, you know, regular services. I do so many services every day. But when he comes, if he sees me, you know, drying the deity plates, he immediately comes in and takes the towel and takes over the service. That my spiritual master shouldn't be doing this. The servants should be doing this, not the master. And so, if you always take that mood about, you can be with that senior devotee, but then always be in the mood of serving him. You know, can I wash your clothes? Can I iron your dhoti? In this way, you're always in the mood of rendering service to him. And then it is okay. You will not be familiarity breeds contempt. Just like Prabhupada had personal servants who were with him all the time. Because they're always in the mood of serving him. Two especially were very good at that. That was Shrutakirti Prabhu and Harisari Prabhu. They both spent a long time with Prabhupada and they're totally in the mood of serving. And they were able to remain with Prabhupada without familiarity breeds contempt by always being very enthusiastic to expertly serve Srila Prabhupada. So if there's a senior devotee you're attached to, you like to associate with him, then just always be in the mood of rendering service. Always, whenever you see him, offer your obeisances. Every time, again and again and again. And then just always offer your service to him. And always inquire submissively on transcendental subject matters. And in this way, you'll be able to have that, the advantage of being close without the familiarity breeds contempt syndrome. Any other questions? Yes.
You were speaking about non-violence.
Yes, yes.
So if we detect some neophyte behavior on the part of a junior devotee, should we take measures to correct, or think Krishna will take care of it?
As we've explained previously, there are three different types of devotees in relationship to you. There are those who are more advanced than you, those who are equally advanced as you, and those who are less advanced than you. Your duty and responsibility, how to reciprocate lovingly with all three of these, the three of these categories, is as follows. Those who are more advanced, you should serve them, and you should be very eager to learn from them. Those who are equal level, you should be very friendly, sharing realizations, doing things together. And those who are less advanced, you should be very kind to help them come up. Now, if you can effectively instruct someone and it'll have a positive impact, then do that. But if it leads to conflict and they can't take it from you, then point and talk to another older devotee that they have more respect for and let them give the instruction. But the fact is, the more that you can become the living embodiment of Bhagavad Gita, chapter 5, text number 7, the more you'll be able to instruct yourself. Because the more love, it really boils down to the more love you can actually feel for that person, the more they're willing to hear from you, because they can feel it's not a lording it over thing that's happening, it's a loving thing that's happening. That's the key. A bhakti leader, a brand new bhakti leader who doesn't really learn how to show his love for the new bhaktis might get punched in the face sometimes when he instructs a new bhakti. You know, those things happen sometimes. You know what I mean? He might get punched in the face from the new bhakti. But if the bhakti leader has actually, you know, advance very nicely in Krishna consciousness, and he can deal with that new bhakti in such a way, the new bhakti feels, this person loves me so much, he really loves me, he cares about me, then he'll do anything to reciprocate that love coming from the senior devotee. So this whole thing of You know, this Krishna consciousness movement is not, although we have the concept of surrendering like in military discipline, at the same time we have the concept of a spiritual family. A family means a network of loving relationships. So both concepts are there, but given by Prabhupada. They both work together hand in hand. We have our authority. Our spiritual master is there. We're meant to be completely subservient to and follow his instructions. He's part of a chain of command going all the way up to Krishna. So we're meant to be subservient to that chain of command, just like in the military. But at the same time, it's not just some impersonal military, organization. It's a loving family where everything is based, just like in Chaitanya Charitamrita. You can read all the wonderful activities, how these devotees reciprocated with each other. You can read about one devotee who was very humble. He didn't want anybody to take his remnants, and there be people's other devotees would be hiding outside in the bushes, waiting to get his remnants. Because he was a great pure devotee, and they knew if I could just get his remnants, then I'll become a pure devotee. But he won't let me have his remnants out of humility. So just hiding in the bushes outside, so I get a few crumbs of his remnants, you see. So you study the Chaitanya Charitamrita and see the wonderful, loving relationships, how these devotees, reciprocated with each other. This is how our ISKCON should become. It should become just like in the Chaitanya Leela. The ISKCON Leela should be like Chaitanya Leela. And as our devotees mature and become more advanced in Krishna consciousness, our society will become more and more like that. Become more and more like that. Yes. And how much what?
Guests.
Yes. How should we treat the guests when they come? We should treat the guests so nicely that he feels that he is in the spiritual world. He's no longer in the material world. When he comes to the Hare Krishna temple, he should feel that never in my life have I been treated with so much kindness and love. He should feel that this is the place where I must surrender. That's how we should treat. We should see how Prabhupada was so kindly open his heart up, and we have to open our hearts up like that.
So each and every morning, not just the gift shop person answering the phone or the person bringing the windows, but every devotee, if they see someone walking by or walking up, they should try to.
This is we discussed this in the morning class. The India Railways, they have one, sometime, maybe not now, but in the past they had one poster that was distributed throughout their whole company. So every employee must see that the wheel of the train is turning. So every devotee should feel that it is my responsibility to see that this Krishna consciousness movement is inundating the entire world. We discussed that this morning also. The Prabhupada said that a Krishna conscious being is always thinking how to deliver the suffering humanity. So that means every devotee in the temple is supposed to be a Krishna conscious being, otherwise why is he here? Everybody who's living in the temple or who's a member of ISKCON who's at the temple at that minute, not just the residents who are living here, but every ISKCON member, if they're here at the temple, they have to act as an emissary of the Supreme Personality of Godhead. And they have to think, Krishna has sent this person via the telephone or via walking in the door, and it is my responsibility to deal with this person in such a way that they will not take birth again in this material world. that I can actually attract them to Krishna and engage them in devotional service. Not that it is a botheration. The opportunity to act as a representative of Krishna is the greatest privilege. There's no greater privilege to act as a representative of Krishna's pure devotee, Srila Prabhupada, and Prabhupada's representatives. There is no greater opportunity. So we find ourselves in this opportunity, we should feel very blessed. Somebody is inquiring from us about Krishna consciousness. What a great good fortune we have gotten. Yes. Well, that requires intelligence, sensitivity. One has to, and that's developed by watching, by studying the methods of those who are better at it than you are, and also by your own experience too. Yeah, if you sometimes you can overdo it also. It's just, you know, overkill. So you have to find the balance. And every person is different. There's people who are more sattvic, rajasic, and tamasic. That's right. You want to give everyone the bottom line is give everybody a positive experience. That's the bottom line. Just like Prabhupada with that villager in Europe, remember? He was preaching to so many people. This man came in, he was a very simple villager, and Prabhupada just sang him a bhajan. And the man said, "Thank you very much," and he went home. Prabhupada didn't say a word to him. He just sang a bhajan for him. He came for a darshan, he just sang him a bhajan, and the man thanked him and went home. So Prabhupada knew very well that he wasn't ready to hear philosophy, but he was a simple man who could appreciate a nice, beautiful song. So Prabhupada just sang him a song. So in this way we have to learn the advanced preachers, they know the art called desha, kala, patra, time, place, and circumstance. They've become masters at the art of time, place, and circumstance. They can judge. So we have to become like that. You have to become like them. What is it?
So if let's say a regular guest, let's say for example, I come here all the time, I lived here before, so I'm one of the other ISKCON emissaries, so to speak. So
yes, yes.
No need to greet that person because they're regulars. They're an emissary.
Oh, no. We have to always, there's no such thing as somebody is, these people, you know, they're regulars, so, you know, we don't make them feel welcome anymore because they already know they're welcome. It should never be like that. Never. That's like saying, okay, when I'm cultivating, it'd be like saying, I'm cultivating to be my disciple, and once you're initiated, I don't know you anymore. It'd be the same thing. We have to always reinforce that connection. With the people, again and again and again and again and again, it never stops, never stops.
Okay, isn't it like a desikala patra again? It depends on the.
Yeah, but of course, the way a new person will be dealt with in a different way than someone who's been coming for 25 years. The point is, you don't ignore the 25-year person. You're not going to deal with them exactly this. You're not going to deal with them in the same way as a person who's walking in the door for the first time, obviously. But it's not you're going to neglect them also. That's my point. You understand?
But if like someone is immature, first time intimidated, so should one again go and approach that guest? leave him alone.
How were they intimidated?
Like immature preaching or whatever, and suppose that person comes again. So should we go approach him?
So the question, well, you're really getting down in some practical examples. So it's only theoretical, so you can imagine it in different ways, but I'll present one scenario, which would be one way that could be dealt with. First of all, are you talking about the same devotee approaching him again, or another devotee approaching him again? Same devotee, okay. Well, it depends. I would say if I was the temple manager, and it would really, whether I would even allow that devotee to approach him again would depend on how expert that devotee was. If he wasn't expert enough, I may tell him, don't you even approach him. Better is someone else do it.
Like, nobody is there.
You're the only one. Then you pray to Krishna to help you and you do your best. Oh, are you saying you shouldn't? So you're arguing that we should, but these things are so dependent on time, place, and circumstance. I don't see how you can make a hard and fast rule out of it. I mean, it's really dependent on the particulars of the situation. So you're saying that sometimes, your point is, let me understand your point. You're saying that sometimes it might be better to leave them alone rather than agitate them. They want to be left alone.
I'm saying just acknowledging it. We don't even preach here. People come here, as far as I know, what I've seen, nobody goes to preach to somebody unless maybe you're in a gift shop. But just acknowledging somebody's presence that they need.
Oh, you could just go like this, you know. You could just do a little namaskar. Who's going to mind that? Indian person will never mind if somebody offers him respect. Did she respond?
No.
She ignored it.
Yeah, because she was paying more attention to the deity.
Well, she felt that you were an imposition on her Krishna meditation. Oh yeah, I saw people in the class that they weren't going to look at me for anything. I mean, there was no way you could. I mean, you could even come over and grab their head and turn it to the speaker, and they wouldn't. There's no way they're going to turn over and acknowledge that somebody was giving a lecture. I know. I noticed that. Well. This is a challenge. One has to. If I was giving a series of Sunday feast lectures, I would be, you know, I would really, since I only gave one, and I didn't expect that kind of reaction. Because in Austin, generally, everyone, you know, tunes in to the speaker, except for one person, but who always sits and looks at the deity. So we do have one person like that in Austin. So I wasn't totally taken aback. When that happens, I try to get those people. As a speaker, when I have a group of people like that, and I see some people are refusing to tune in to me, what I do is I try to, I take it as a challenge to somehow grab them and pull them in. And if I was giving a series of Sunday feast lectures here, I would definitely be working on doing something to get all those people who refuse to look at the speaker and acknowledge them even there, just sitting like this, you know. I would definitely be doing something to snap them out of it. Oh, yeah. I would take that as a challenge, how I can snap them out of it, because that'll help them advance. Someone refuses to actually take instructions. They remain cow on an ass, according to the Bhagavatam. Everybody knows that verse. Saiva gokaraha. If you go to a holy place and you don't want to take any instructions, you're considered a cow or an ass by the Bhagavatam. So the devotee, when he sees all the cows and asses sitting around, He thinks, how can I convert this person and make them a human being? By getting him to be respectful towards the teaching of this message, you see. How to show respect to the ones who are presenting this knowledge. That's a very important thing. Not that they had to respect me, but they had to respect the tradition of teachers that I represent. The spiritual master doesn't want any respect for himself. He feels that he's totally unworthy of any respect. But he has a duty to accept the respect and the worship for the benefit of the persons, for their benefit. He takes that so they can be benefited. Because whoever is speaking, whether it's you or whether it's me, whoever's speaking, they're acting as a representative of the disciplic succession. So if the persons can respect the speaker, then that respect goes all the way up through Prabhupada, through Bhaktisiddhanta, goes all the way up the disciplic line to Krishna himself. So that's what I would do. I would try to somehow or other, you know, get them to pay more respect to the speaker. And little things like this help. You see, the more the devotees the temple devotees can show respect to the speaker, then everyone will think, oh, I guess everyone else, the devotees are respecting, so we should also respect. Those things will help too. But if the devotees are not so respectful to whoever's giving the lecture, and they're not really so much paying attention or whatever. But here the devotees do pay nice attention. But I'm just saying, the more that respect can be shown to the speaker, that will actually help the audience also to get the idea they're supposed to be respectful. You say, even though it's their own scriptures, they don't even know their own scriptures. So we know their scriptures better than they do, so we have to become living embodiments. So this is a good example. Thank you very much. Yes? All right.
What if the person giving the lecture doesn't look at the crowd?
Well, there are different scenarios in this regard. If you watched any of the Prabhupada videos of him giving lectures, sometimes Prabhupada would just sit there with his eyes closed. Of course, that is, in America, if you take public speaking, you are taught to have eye contact with your audience. Prabhupada was not trained in the American style of public speaking. He was trained in the Bhaktisiddhanta line of public speaking. I know one of our most powerful, poignant speakers our movement has ever seen was His Holiness Sridhar Maharaj, and sometimes he would just sit there with his eyes closed. But he would speak so powerfully, you'd just be drawn in like a magnet. So even though if you study public speaking techniques, you go to some of these ISKCON communication seminars, you know, they'll teach you to have eye contact with your audience. But that isn't necessarily something you have to do. I actually prefer to do it myself. I find it helpful. But it's not something that I know, it's not something that one absolutely has to do according to our parampara system. Because I've seen it in Prabhupada and also in His Holiness Sridhar Maharaj. And they were both very powerful, charismatic speakers who attracted everyone. And Sridhar Maharaj's lectures, it was so enlivening. Very enlivening lectures. And he would oftentimes just sit there with his eyes closed. But he was roaring like a lion. He would sit there, and you ever heard Sridhar Swami's lectures? He would sit there and roar like a lion. So powerfully. With his eyes closed. You couldn't ignore him. You got a roaring lion sitting on the Vyasasana. You couldn't ignore him. He was so powerful, but he would have his eyes closed a lot of times. Not all the times, but sometimes he would give a lecture completely like this. So there's really not a hard and fast rule. You got to judge by the result. But the fact is, the more that somebody is advanced in Krishna consciousness, the more they're able to attract people's attention. That's a fact. When Prabhupada spoke, you know, that everything, everyone, that was it. And there was nothing else. When Prabhupada was speaking, we just wanted to hear Prabhupada. That's all. We had nothing. That was our, we felt this was the perfection of our existence, to sit at his lotus feet and hear him speak. That was the perfection of our existence. Questions more? Yes.
Through here in the verse, it's talking about one who controls mind and senses is dear to everyone, but a lot of our young people, they don't like this. They don't like that we're trying to be controlled and, you know, control the senses. They really like our festivals, but they don't like a lot of these points.
Yes, yes. So what is the question then?
So
how to convince them?
Preach to them in such a way that they can understand.
Yes, yes. Well, you have to, you mentioned they like the festivals. So you can tell them like this, how would you like to be celebrating such a festival 24 hours a day? Would you like that? And if they say, yes, 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 I would love to do that. I would love to be able to celebrate like this 24 hours a day. You can tell them, well, you can tell them like this, this is pretty esoteric stuff. I don't know if you're ready for it. It's pretty esoteric, high-level knowledge. It's secret, high-level knowledge, you see. I don't really want it. You know, we don't tell it to everybody. But if you're really looking for how you can celebrate, be celebrating a festival 24 hours a day, in all times, all places, and all circumstances. Do you understand my point? Do you understand what I'm talking about? If you really want to celebrate, be able to celebrate, I hope you're tuned in now, right? Okay, good. Eye contact, right? You got it. Okay. If you really want to experience a festival 24 hours a day, then there's some secret, very high-level knowledge that I'll turn you on to if you're ready for it. And if he says, yeah, that sounds really cool, man. Tell me, come on, tell me. Now, it's really esoteric. I don't know if you're ready for it or not yet. No, come on, tell me. You got to tell me. No, I don't know. Maybe you're not really ready for it. You got to be pretty mature. No, I'm really mature. You tell me. You could do like that. You get them where they're practically on their knees begging. I mean, that, you know. The more you advance in Krishna consciousness, Krishna will give you intelligence. How to preach in such a way you can attract anybody to Krishna consciousness. Prabhupada wrote me one letter actually about book distribution. Because a lot of devotees were using all kinds of really far out, you know, you could say, far out tales, put it mildly or politely, to sell books. And my nature was more of my style or propensity was how to tell the truth in a very creative way that would have the same result. So you can be, you know, you can make a very amazing story about how one devotee used to say, the Chaitanya Charitamrita, this is a book about Christian Chaitanya, a Christian missionary in India. He would sell the Chaitanya Charitamrita in the deep south to the Christians by that technique. Christian Chaitanya. My nature was that I wanted to tell the truth in such a way they would take the book. So I asked Prabhupada about this. And he said yes. And he said that actually that one can do that. One should learn the art that one can tell the truth in such a way that any person will take. So that applies also in our preaching activities. That if we, you know, really cultivate our own Krishna consciousness very nicely. We're constantly working on developing our own preaching abilities very nicely. that Krishna will give us. He will empower us, that we can explain it in such a way in their language, not necessarily their own words that they use, but we can explain our Vedic concepts to them in such a way that they're enlivened by it, they're turned on by it. So yes, it is possible to convince someone that bringing their mind and senses under control will be the most incredibly wonderful, ecstatic thing they could ever do. There's a Hindi saying, if you can control your mind, you can conquer the whole world. So ask him, would you like to conquer the world? Or do you just want to be a roboton? A cog in the machine? What would you prefer? You want to be a world conqueror or a cog in the machine? If you want to be a world conqueror, then you just conquer your mind, and you can conquer the whole world. If you don't want to conquer your mind, well, just somebody else will control you. If you can control your mind, then nobody can control you, you see. But if you can't control your mind, then you'll end up being controlled by other people. Material society will control you. This Krishna consciousness movement is not a brainwashed society or a mind society where we control people's minds. This is a society where we teach you how to bring your mind under your control so you can't be controlled by anyone's propaganda. This is what we're teaching. We're teaching you how to think, critically analyze everything, and come to the highest possible conclusion of transcendental realization. This is what we are teaching. We are not, this is not a brainwashed cult. If you're looking for a brainwashed cult, they're all over the place. But this, the whole material world is a brainwashed cult. But if you're looking for a place where you can actually bring your mind on, you can control your own mind perfectly, 24 hours a day, then you come to the right place. So ask him, would you rather control your own mind or have somebody else control it for you? It's one or the other. You want to think for yourself or somebody else do your thinking for you? What do you prefer? So we're teaching you how to think for yourself. That's our Krishna consciousness movement. Questions more? Hare Krishna. All right, we'll stop here. Thank you all very much for your kind attention. Srila Prabhupada ki jai. Srimad Bhagavad Gita ki jai. Hare Krishna. Yes.